Good morning, Delaware. Boy, what a beautiful morning. Drove in this morning early, saw the sunrise, just the beautiful peach-colored sunrise.
Yeah.
It was just a beautiful morning. And the reason I was out and about, good morning, Nicole.
Good morning.
Because today is, according to the Society for Human Resources Management, Employee Appreciation Day. So I was driving some treats around to each of our libraries, dropped them off for them this morning. But I wanted to say before we got started that I am so incredibly proud of the staff at the Delaware County District Library for all that they've done, for all they've been through over the pandemic and everything else, being so stalwart and doing such a great job. So I wanted them to get a little treat, but also the just to know that how much Molly and I and the board appreciate everything they do. So thanks, guys. We really do love you.
Yeah, that's really awesome, George.
So
look at you. You're up. You're greeting the sun. You're thanking your library employees.
It also gave me the chance to hear almost all of the morning show this morning, the Breakfast Club. So, and how much I appreciate that show, too. It's so much fun. So I got to talk about cereal with Mark this morning, and it was just great.
That
cereal?
Is great.
Breakfast
you're
cereal.
You're leaving me out of this.
I grew up within smelling range of where they make Cheerios, Totals, and Wheaties in Buffalo. And my neighborhood, every now and then, would just smell like every grandmother was baking at once.
like honey and wheat and...
Yeah, but this was before Honey Nut Cheerios, so it was just that like bread smell almost. It was gorgeous.
I like that smell when I drive past the Budweiser plant on 71 and 270.
Mean, yeah.
I like that smell a lot.
Anyway, our guest this morning is Kelly Cochran, who is the Youth Services Manager for the Delaware County District Library. Good morning, Kelly.
Good morning.
Hello.
Well, I'm glad to hear you're upbeat, too. And so we're going to be talking in the second half of the show about the controversy that broke this week about Dr. Seuss and what that all comes together about.
But hot topics.
Before we do that, let's talk a little bit about what we've been reading, listening to, binging, etc.
I got nothing. I got a couple things. Nothing that, so the thing that I've been watching lately is actually everybody was talking about Firefly Lane, which is a new one on Netflix. So Netflix is paid to subscribe. This is the first debut of it. So unless you're a paid subscriber, it's not at the library quite yet. However, it is made based on a book by Kristen Hanna. I will have to look up and see if it's under the same name, Firefly Lane. But that's one of the wonderful things about the made-for-TV kind of books and movies. Actually, I was talking to one of my coworkers about it, that the TV show reads a lot like a book. You know, it's one of those books that jumps around in timelines constantly. Mm-hmm. It is non-linear in any way. But you imagine when you start each chapter or each section, it probably gives you that, like, you know, June 5th, 1975, you know, February 1st, 2013. Mm-hmm. The show doesn't give you that. And so, of course, you get the clues from the hair and the makeup and the outfits and different things like that. But sometimes it tricks you. And you're in what you think is like kind of the present day story, but it jumps into like a near future, like a year ahead, which gets a little confusing. So it's a fun one. But actually what I have been really paying attention to lately is we have book lists that our youth services and children's librarians make that are reading recommendations based on grade and age level. Mm-hmm. And now that I actually have a real live kindergartner, we have been trying to supplement some of the things because Delaware City Schools, if you're paying attention, they've been on a hybrid schedule. They'll continue to stay on a hybrid schedule through the end of the year. So we've been trying to supplement a little bit. And so we've been reading our way through the kindergarten I Can Read All By Myself reading list.
Ah, yes.
Yeah. Kelly and I actually take a look at it every once in a while because, you know, as a youth services manager, she wants to know what's on it. Also, if there are ones, because every once in a while I'll bring one over to her and I'm like, this is too many words. And my kindergartner doesn't know these words. And she's like, nope, it's off the list. So that's really valuable information that our parents can also give us and our teachers can also give us if they look at the list and they feel it's not quite right. So we have several books that we've been reading our way through. There's Where is the Green Sheep is a good one. There is, Kelly, help me out. I feel like there are other ones that I've talked to you about. I put you on the spot.
Oh, there's the Orange Bear Pear.
Yeah, there's a really, that one's super cute. It only has five words in the entire book, and four of them are orange, pear, apple, and bear. But what the author does is she plays with the words and the illustrations so that it's an orange, as in what you eat, an apple, as in what you eat, and then a bear, and then a pear, as in what you eat. But every once in a while, she'll play around with commas. And so it will be orange bear, as in an orange describing the color of the bear.
Right.
Sometimes it's an apple bear, so the bear is in the shape and color of an apple. Pear bear, which is super cute. That's a very fun one. And then the fifth word at the very end is there.
Ah. Very cute.
Yeah. So we have lots of resources. This is for all ages. And as the lists get older in the age levels, then it gets a little bit more. We diversify a little bit more. So as the reading is a little bit broader for, you know, sixth, seventh, and eighth grader, even high schoolers, then we have like really broad lists. Like maybe you want some, you know, fractured fairy tales, stories that are based in fairy tale. Maybe you want some horror. Maybe you want some romance. Maybe you want some sci-fi. Something along those lines. Then we have those that are like broader reading lists for the older ages.
Excellent.
Yeah.
So Kelly, what are you reading these days?
Actually, it's a good tie-in with what Nicole was talking about a little bit earlier. The book series I brought to talk about what is going to be a Netflix series at the end of April.
Ooh, that's fun.
And it's supposed to come out, yeah, at the end of April. It's called Shadow and Bone. And I think our teen librarian Shannon has already talked about it, and that's probably why I read it, is because she talked about it on the show. So I'm going to talk about it again. It's called Shadow and Bone. It came out years ago, and actually when I finished reading this first book in the trilogy, I thought to myself, oh, I'm kind of sad. I almost missed this book. I almost missed it. And I really did enjoy it. It's a lot like a lot of the young adult books that came out at that time. It's a trilogy because everything's got to have three books. there's magic. There's kind of sci-fi stuff. But it's the story of this world, this made-up world. And that's why I think I gravitated so well to it, is because it was so magical. It kind of let me escape. It definitely had that escapism in it. But in this world, there's this dark fold, which is exactly that. It's divided the world. It's this big, dark expanse of space, and there's creatures in it, and they're awful, and everyone goes in it, doesn't come out. Well, and then also in this magical world, there are two types of people. There are those who have magical abilities and those who do not. And the main character actually just finds out that she does have a magical ability, but she has something very unique that nobody has. Her magic ability is that she can blast light out of her body, which of course makes sense with the dark fold that she can just, you know, clean that up kind of thing. But there's all these different things, these politics in it, and then of course, like a true young adult trilogy, there's a love triangle. And she's in love with her best friend from school and from her youth. And, of course, she was an orphan. There's a lot of things that, like, all these young adult books kind of have.
Right.
They're so good. And I don't mind that they keep repeating it. It's like the Disney movies. Like, I'm okay that everyone's an orphan. Whatever.
It's just a natural thing.
I hope your daughter doesn't get the idea that being an orphan's a good idea, or else you better hide the kitchen knives.
I'll have to keep an eye on that. So she was an orphan growing up. She has an orphan boyfriend who is a friend who is a boy, and she's in love with him, can't tell him. And then she also meets this new guy who's like the master of the magic world. He's like the lead magic guy, and she kind of falls in love with him. But does she fall in love with him, or is she being manipulated by him? And is he the true creator of this dark fold? And then it goes on and on. And I only read the first one.
But oh, my goodness.
It is going to be a Netflix series. And I'm kind of excited because I was looking at it. And like I said, sometimes when they put things into movies or TV, they don't do it very good. But the producer is the author. The author is one of the producers, which is always a good sign for me.
Yes.
For example, going back to like Lemony Snicket, like the movie was okay, but the Netflix series where the author was a part of the production and producing it with Neil Patrick Harris was way better.
And Patrick Warburton.
I'm super excited.
It's amazing.
I don't know if I'll read the other two. I'll probably get distracted by something else along the way, but it was really good. It was is magical. It was fun. It had all the stuff that a good young adult dystopian type book would have.
And remind us again, you said Shadow and Bone?
Yes.
Shadow and Bone by Lee. Oh, by Lee Bardugo. Is that right?
Yes.
Wonderful. Yes. Oh, and I did double check. Firefly Lane is the title of the book by Kristen Hanna. So.
Sounds good.
Wonderful. What are you reading, George?
Well, I am going to talk a little bit about a TV personality that many people know, but may not know him as an author, and that is Ken Jennings.
That's right.
Ken Jennings, the GOAT, the greatest of all times, Jeopardy champ. I think he's won more money on game shows than anybody else in history. Wow. He also won $100,000 on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, which I didn't even realize till I was starting to work on this one. And he just finished his six-week stint as the guest host of Jeopardy. So I got started on this because Joyce for Christmas got me a book, Ken Jennings Trivia Almanac, which is 8,888 questions in 365 days.
Goodness.
So every night, as we're watching TV, we sit down and I ask her half the questions for each day and she asks me half the questions. These are tough trivia questions. This is not Jeopardy level. This is like Mensa level. Yeah, and some of them are so obscure that I think even Ken Jennings had to Google them. But it's a lot of fun. And that book is available. But he's also written seven kids books under the Junior Genius Guides series. And all the titles sound like they should be Jeopardy categories. The Human Body, Greek Mythology, Outer Space, Dinosaurs, U.S. Presidents, Ancient Egypt, Maps and Geography. Right? I mean, they sound like Jeopardy categories.
They do.
He's also written half a dozen books for adults. The one that's the newest, I think, looking at this, the newest is called Planet Funny, How Comedy Took Over Our Culture. And he talks about how comedy came to dominate public discussion of everything from politics to sports to just about anything you can think of. And it runs the gamut from Randy Rainbow to the Berkeley Bee in politics from left to right. And it runs and he talks about how this can be a good thing or a bad thing. He talks about how, for example, Southwest Airlines and some other airlines have made their safety thing at the beginning funny. Yeah. So you'll actually pay attention to it.
Right.
And so it says that's got its good parts and its bad parts. His autobiography is called Brainiac, Adventures in the Curious, Competitive, Compulsive World of Trivia Buffs. And it starts with him and his friend driving from, I think, from Los Angeles or from Las Vegas to Los Angeles to take the Jeopardy test when he was first trying out.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of it's a lot of fun. And so he writes really well. It's a nice light style. And if you've watched him on TV, you know that he's just kind of personable. He's incredibly intelligent, but he doesn't wear it on his sleeve. He just has fun with it. So you also might, if you start looking him up, there's another author named Ken Jennings who writes books on servant leadership, which is also something I'm very interested in, but it has nothing to do with the Jeopardy champion. So, and finally, there's also a kid's book by Kristen Anderson called Who is Ken Jennings? Which sounds like a Jeopardy question. So
that's
anyway,
right.
We have all of the books I've mentioned here in the library collection in one form or another. So if you're interested in any of this, please check out the library's website at DelawareLibrary.org and check out old Ken. So we will be back in just a moment with Kelly Cochran to talk a little bit about Dr. Seuss. So stay tuned. Welcome back to Off the Shelf. Good morning, Nicole.
Good morning, George.
And good morning, Kelly. How you doing?
Good.
Again, of course,
maybe
as
always. Maybe a little too excited.
We got hot topics to talk about. We're all amped on our coffee.
Yeah, I'm on my second cup. I'm ready to go.
Let's go.
So anyway, to set the stage, this week was an announcement was made by Dr. Seuss Enterprises that they were going to stop printing and licensing six titles by Dr. Seuss that were published between 1937 and 1976 because of content that was deemed to be racist or otherwise not currently acceptable.
Mm-hmm.
And so that announcement created a whole lot of controversy out in the world. I know Fox News has been talking about this quite a bit. I've seen a lot on Facebook and in other sources. And I have to say, Kelly, for us in the library world, this isn't really a surprise. Okay, you're on radio. You're going to have to give a little more answer than that.
No, no.
I am nodding my head. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So this is kind of really interesting for especially youth services librarians, because, I mean, we've been talking about this for, like, ever. We talked about it when I was in library school over a decade ago. I've gone to conferences where we spend days talking and debating and discussing and talking about this kind of stuff. So it's definitely not new to us, but it's exciting to kind of see what the general public kind of, now that they're involved, like, because now they're involved. Mm-hmm. Everyone knows Dr. Seuss.
Right. And I think,
of course, some people... Sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, I think because it is Dr. Seuss, people react more vicariously vociferously, because
yeah.
Everybody knows Dr. Seuss, and everybody knows, and practically everybody who's alive today grew up with his books. I mean, his first book was for kids was published in 1937. My mother was 5 years old when that book came out.
Mm-hmm.
So practically everyone alive today had these books as a kid. And
more of the books that he's created have been published since his death. Than ones that were actually published while he was alive. Mm-hmm. At least 2/3 more have been printed since he's been dead.
Right. So I think this is one of the reasons why, because if it had been an author who was less well known, who was less represented in the culture at large, we probably never would have heard about this, because books go out of print all the time.
Right.
This is nothing new. Mm-hmm. When publishers decide that the interest in a book has waned, or because the content is outdated or has been proved factually inaccurate or otherwise has run its course, they let them go out of print. And that's exactly what Dr. Seuss Enterprises is doing. They work through Random House, which is the kind of the parent organization, but the estate is controlled by Dr. Seuss Enterprises, which owns the rights for doing basically everything with Dr. Seuss characters. And they protect that trademark and copyright quite well, because I know, because we got in trouble 20 years ago when I worked at the Public Library Association over using the Cat in the Hat for something. So cease and desist letters are never fun.
No.
We did work it out, but it was not pleasant.
Well, but yeah, to Kelly's point earlier, you said you've been discussing this for a decade, mm-hmm. and it's not always with, you know, Seuss as the focus. It's just that fact. Mm-hmm. It's the fact that books go in and out of print. And as we learn that there are some materials within or pieces within those books that are maybe culturally insensitive, or, you know, maybe just portray different cultures in a way that we now know is wrong, what do we do with that information? So, mm-hmm. you know, what do you learn at your conferences and things like that librarians are to do when we learn about this sort of thing?
And that's the tricky thing, is nobody has an answer. It's so tricky. And some of the reasons why it's so tricky for libraries is, in youth services, we spend so much time, there's a lot of dedication to making sure that we create collections that represent our community, that are diverse, and that we're fostering this anti-racist library culture. And then we have these classics that are adored and loved that don't necessarily fit in with some of those other things. So we have that kind of going on. And we also, we're here to serve our communities. I mean, that's our main thing, is we want to give the community what they want and what they need. And people love Seuss. Mm-hmm. They also love other books that are kind of similar. There's been conversations about, like, The Little House on the Prairie. Like, it's just not Seuss. There's been conversations on all different types of books. And people are very in love with Seuss because it helps them learn how to read.
Mm-hmm.
They have memories of sitting on their grandma's lap listening to books and all that stuff. There's also a viewpoint of that these books can provide educational opportunities for parents and caregivers and teachers. Like, we could use these books and show and talk about why it's not appropriate anymore. So there's that too.
I think though that there's the others.
Note that.
Go ahead, Kelly. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt.
Oh, sorry. I have a script here, so
gotta hit those points.
Right.
Yes. So it's also important to remember that public libraries aren't necessarily in the business of archiving things.
Right.
Like, yes, Delaware County has a local history room, and we do play a role in keeping Delaware history, but it's not necessarily our job to keep all of these super old books for archival purposes. There's college libraries. There are archives that do that.
Yeah, we can leave that to the Smithsonian. We can leave that to, you know, other national children's. Yeah.
It doesn't even have to be at that level. Bowling Green State University has a great collection of juvenile literature. Kent State University has a whole study of children's literature. Those are the kind of collections where these go. And I think it's, you know, when you talk about the educational function, it's I would much rather have books that show a gamut of people that in a positive light rather than having to go back and correct the negative impressions that are in there. It's I think as a parent or as a grandparent, I would want to just show a book that has lots of kids of different races, different abilities in the same setting, just naturally, rather than have to say, okay, this is why this child looks so different, because back in 1937,
right, people,
this was an acceptable thing, even if it was wrong then. What cranky 3-year-old at bedtime is going to want to hear that explanation?
Understand that, right?
You know? So, and I also want to make a point here before we miss this point. This is 6 books out of a body of work that is probably at least 80 titles. Books like Horton Hears a Who, Horton Hatches the Egg, Green Eggs and Ham, Cat in the Hat, How the Grinch Stole Christmas, The Lorax, Hop on Pop, all of those are still going to be available. All of those are still the beloved books by this beloved author. Mm-hmm. And there's no sense that we're banning any of these. This is a way of just keeping it fresh enough that it's still relevant for kids in 2021 instead of kids in 1937.
And in fact, ban isn't even part of the conversation, because what's going to happen is what naturally happens within a public library books is these books are going to be disintegrated by like just use.
By love, yes.
By love. I mean, Kelly, what's the average circ for a youth services, a children's book? Board books, they disintegrate after so many circulations, you know, paperback books, they're going to fall apart within. I mean, we're reordering books constantly.
Right. And what about 40 checkouts is when it starts falling apart. And what happens is we call it weeding in the library when we remove items, because we have limited shelf space.
Right.
So to bring new stuff in, you got to get the old stuff out. It's just like your closet at home and everything there.
That's right.
So we weed on what our community wants. If it's not checking out anymore, we give it the boot. We make room for new stuff that they will check out. We also look at condition. And that's kind of where it's interesting with this is we do weed a lot of these classic books because of their condition, because they're well-loved. And then we have youth services librarians who take the time, look into it, and decide whether or not we replace these titles. And with these books that are no longer being published, they won't be able to be replaced. So
right. That's
kind of how that works out. But I do have a warm, fuzzy librarian message with all this youth business.
Tell us.
And I would love to kind of share that. I know we're running out of time. But my warm, fuzzy takeaway is a lot of the arguments I'm hearing about this youth book not being published is that they're so nostalgic. People are saying, oh, it helps me learn to read. And I read it with my mom, and I want to just kind of pause for a second and really think about that. That is the magic. It's not necessarily the book. The books are important. Books are magical. But it's the experiences that people are having with books, the sharing moments with the people you care about with books. That will always be there, whether or not these books are there or not. And sharing these picture books with young children also develops the love of reading, and that builds skills that will help kids learn how to read and will keep them reading after they learn. So my big warm fuzzy is that a lot of people feel uncomfortable because they have such warm feelings about these books. And there are still going to be plenty of books. There's always going to be books that we can
and plenty of warm feelings.
Kelly, that
and then all the warm fuzzies.
That, I can't think
someone
of a better.
Someone needs to hug a kid right now. I keep hugging myself. We can share and have these memories.
I gotta say, that's
a lot of research has been done on how kids learn how to read, and some of these Dr. Seuss books aren't necessarily the best books to learn how to read. So you know,
there you go.
Change, we move on. We'll still have books, and we'll still have hugs and warm feelings.
I can't think of a better way to wrap up that conversation. Thank you, Kelly.
That's my warm fuzzy.
We are rapidly running out of time, but fortunately, I know that the city show was pre-recorded, so we're not making Lee and Adam stand outside in the cold waiting to come in. So I'm going to go ahead and steal a minute from them and mention something. The Alzheimer's Association representatives were speakers at the Delaware Rotary Club this week, and they mentioned that next week they are having a virtual forum on Tuesday the 9th at 10:30 in the morning, specifically reaching out to Delaware County and its African-American population, specifically because African-Americans have a higher rate of Alzheimer's, almost double the rate of Alzheimer's of white Americans. And they are trying to reach out to that community to make sure that they know about the resources that are available from the association, early warning signs and things like that. If you want to register for this, there's an 800 number, 800-272-3900, or just contact me at the library. I'll put you in touch with the people at the Alzheimer's Association who can get you registered for this. I think this is a really important topic, and the library has nothing to do with this at all. We're not co-sponsoring it. You won't find it on our events page, but you may be interested in talking to that one. You got one quick one you want to talk about before we sign off here, Nicole?
Yeah, just want to give an extra plug for our friends at Delaware County Transit. You might have also known them as Data or Data Bus. They are giving free rides to get COVID vaccines from now until July 31st. You need to call them at least noon the day before your scheduled appointment, and they'll get you a ride there. So in case transportation is an issue, you can call Delaware County Transit to get yourself a free ride to get your COVID vaccine.
Great. Thank you very much, Nicole.
No problem.
Thank you, Gage, as always, for your great manning of the board. We appreciate that. And Kelly, thank you so much for giving us a great perspective on what's going on with children's literature today. And I'm so happy to say we will see you in the stacks.